she said.
But it's Lee's granddad's birthday. You know, the one she lived with.
She paused and gave him a significant look, inviting him to remember, to join the dots.
Lee was upset and couldn't face lessons. I'm sorry if we did wrong.
For a minute, I gaped. Was it Grandad's birthday? It was a year since he died. Had I really forgotten? Then sense returned, and with it, anger. No. No, of course it wasn't. His birthday was in May. We were only in March. Mr. Bannington stood, chewing his moustache and frowning. Then he put his hand on my shoulder.
Well, under these circumstances, I cannot condone this, girls. If there were a fire alarm, then lives could be put at risk looking for you. Do you understand? So please don't make a habit of it. But under the circumstances, we will say no more about it. This once.
I'm sorry, Mr. Bannington.
Claire's head drooped, chastened, deflated.
I was just trying to be a good friend. It's been hard for Lee, you know?
And Mr. Bannington coughed a choked-up cough, gave one short, sharp nod, turned on his heel, and left. I was so angry I couldn't speak on the way back to school. How dare she? How dare she? At the school gate, she laid a hand on my shoulder.
Lee, look, I hope you don't mind. I just couldn't think what else to say, you know? I was the one that persuaded you to bunk. I thought it was my responsibility to get us out of the mess.
My face was stiff. I tried to imagine what my mother would have said if I was suspended, and how Claire had got us both off the hook. I thought about May, and how I was going to have to go through the day, the real day of my granddad's birthday, without mentioning that fact, or referring to it ever again. Thanks, I said, in a hard, unnatural voice that did not stammer, that did not sound like me. Claire only smiled, and I felt her sunshine warmth.
You're welcome.
And I felt myself thaw and smile back, almost in spite of myself. After all, Claire had only been trying to be a good friend.
No.
Flo?
You're not leaving.
Melanie stood for a moment in the middle of the kitchen, as if trying to think of something to say. At last, she gave a snort of disbelieving laughter.
And yet, apparently, I am.
She slung her bag on her shoulder and tried to push past Flo towards the door.
No!
Flo shouted. There was an edge of hysteria to her voice.
I won't let you ruin it!
Flo, stop being such a basket case!
Melanie snapped back.
I know this is important to you, but look at yourself. Claire doesn't give a flying fuck whether I'm here or not. You've got this picture in your head of how things should be, and you can't force people to go along with it. Get a grip.
You! Flo stabbed with her finger at Melanie. You are a bad friend. And a bad person.
I'm not a bad friend. Melanie sounded very tired all of a sudden. I'm just a parent. My life doesn't revolve around Claire bloody Cavendish. Now please, get out of my way. She pushed past Flo's outstretched arms towards the hallway and looked up.
Claire, you're awake. What's going on?
Claire was coming down the stairs in a crumpled linen wrap. The sun was shining down from the window behind her head, illuminating her hair like a halo.
I heard shouting. What's going on?
She repeated.
I'm going.
Melanie walked a few steps up, gave her a brisk kiss, and then hitched her bag further onto her shoulder.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't have come. I wasn't ready to leave Ben, and the situation with the phone is just making it worse. What situation with the phone?
The landline's down, Melanie said. But it's not that, not really. I want to be back home. I shouldn't have come.
You don't mind, do you?
Of course not.
Claire yawned and brushed hair out of her eyes.
Don't be silly. If you're miserable, then go. I'll see you at the wedding anyway.
Yeah.
Melanie gave a nod. Then she leaned forwards with a quick glance over her shoulder at Flo and said in a low voice,
Look, Claire, help her to get a grip, yeah? It's not healthy for anyone.
And then she opened the door, slammed it behind her, and the last we heard was the grate of her car tires as she bumped down the rutted driveway to the lane. Flo began to cry, heavily and snottily. For a moment I stood, wondering what I could do. Then Claire came down the rest of the stairs, yawning, took Flo's arm, and led her into the kitchen. I heard the bubble of the kettle beneath Flo's gulping, retching tears, and Claire's soothing voice.
"You saved my life,"
Flo gasped between sobs.
"How am I supposed to forget that?"
"Honey," I heard Claire say. There was a kind of loving exasperation in her voice. "How many times?" I retreated upstairs, backwards, keeping my steps light and silent, and then at the landing I turned and fled. I knew I was being a coward, but I couldn't help it. The door to the bedroom I shared with Nina was closed, and I was just about to turn the handle and barge in when I heard Nina's voice from inside, filled with an uncharacteristic yearning softness.
"Miss you too. God, I wish I were home with you."
"Are you in bed?"
Long pause. "You're breaking up." "Yeah, the reception's awful. I tried to phone you last night, but there was nothing. I've only got half a bar now." Another pause.
"No, just some bloke called Tom. He's okay."
"Oh, sweetheart, Jess, I love you."
I coughed. I didn't want to burst in on the middle of her conversation. Nina doesn't let her guard down often, and when she does, she doesn't like it to be seen. I know that from experience.
"Wish I was snuggled up with you. I'm missing you so much. It's the back of beyond up here, nothing but trees and hills. I'm half tempted to leave, but I don't think Nora..."
I coughed again, louder, and rattled the handle, and she broke off and called, "Hello?" I opened the door and she grinned.
"Oh, Nora's just come in. We're sharing a room."
"What? It's breaking up again."
Pause.
"Don't worry, definitely not. Yeah, I'll tell her. Okay, I better go. I can hardly hear you."
"I love you too. Bye. Love you."
She hung up and smiled up at me from the pile of pillows.
"Jess says hi."
"Oh, glad you got through to her. Is she all right?" I love Jess. She is small and round and comfortable with a smile that lights up a room and no snark about her at all. The exact opposite of Nina, in fact. They're the perfect couple.
"Yeah, she's fine. Missing me?
Natch." Nina stretched until her joints popped and then sighed.
"God, I wish she was here.
Or I wasn't. One of the two."
"Well, there's a vacancy. We're one down."
"What?"
"Melanie, she's gone. The landline's down and it was the last straw."
"Christ, you're kidding. It's like Agatha effing Christie and the 10 little Eskimos."
"Indians?"
"What?"
10 little Indians in the book."
"It was Eskimos."
"It bloody wasn't."
I sat down on the bed. "It was the N-word, actually, if you're going for the original. Then Indians, then soldiers, when they decided that offing ethnic minorities was maybe a bit strange. It was never Eskimos."
"Well, whatever."
Nina dismissed the Eskimos with a wave of her hand.
"Is there any coffee down there?"
"Nope, just tea, remember?" I reached for a jumper, pulled it over my head and smoothed my hair. "Claire doesn't drink coffee, so neither do we."
"Ugh. God, fucking Flo and the satellite of love. How's she taking Melanie's departure?"
"Hmm. Listen, and you might be able to..." I trailed off, and we both heard the unmistakable sound of heavy sobs coming up from the kitchen. Nina rolled her eyes.
"She is unhinged. I really mean that. She was weird when they were at university. Have you noticed how she copies what Claire wears? She used to do that back then, too. But now..."
"I don't think she's unhinged." I shifted uncomfortably. "Claire's a powerful personality. If you're not very confident..." I stopped, struggling to put into words the feeling that I'd always had, that my own personality was a space, a vacuum that someone like Claire could rush into to fill. It was something that I knew Nina would never understand. With all her faults, lack of personality is not one of them. She lay there, eyeing me speculatively from the pillow, and then shrugged. "Claire's perfect, do you know what I mean?" I said at last. "It's easy to want that for yourself and feel like imitation is the way to get it."
"Maybe,"
Nina sat up, pulling her skimpy vest top straight.
I still think Flo's a few cherries short of a trifle, but whatever. Look, I've been meaning to say, I really am sorry about last night. I had no idea it was such a sore spot for you. But seriously, why did you come if you still feel like that about it all?
I pulled on my jeans and then stood, chewing my lip, thinking over what I had and hadn't told Nina. It's always my instinct to keep my cards close to my chest. I don't know why. I dislike giving people, even friends, the smallest hold over me. I've always been a private person, and that tendency has grown since I started to live alone and work alone. But I knew, too, that tendency could send me as crazy as Flo in my own way, if I let it. I came because... I took a breath and then forced myself on. Because I had no idea that Claire was marrying James.
What?
Nina swung her legs out of bed and looked at me. I gave a tremulous shrug. Put like that, it did sound kind of pathetic.
What, are you serious? So Claire, like, lured you here to spring that shit on you?
Not exactly. Shit, stop stammering. She said she wanted to tell me to my face, that she felt she owed me that.
Fuck that.
Nina pulled a shirt over her head, and for a moment her voice was muffled. Then it cleared as her head popped out, her cheeks pink with indignation.
If she wanted to meet you face to face, the normal thing to do would be to invite you out for a drink, not lure you into some godforsaken forest. What was she thinking?
I don't think she meant it like that. Christ, what was I doing defending her? I think she just didn't think.
Ugh.
Nina stood up and began brushing her hair angrily, the strands crackling as she dragged the brush through them.
How does she get away with pulling this crap?
And she comes out of it smelling of roses every time.
Do you remember when she told everyone in Year 10 that I fancied Debbie Harry, and then claimed it was because she felt bad that I was having to live a lie, and everyone acted like she was doing me a fucking favour?
I didn't know what to say. The Debbie Harry incident had been brutal. I still remembered Nina's shocked expression when she came into the classroom and Claire was humming Hanging on the Telephone with that particular smile on her face, and the whole class sniggering.
It's all about her. It's about how she looks and feels. Back then, she wanted to look like the caring, liberal, accepting friend, and so out it comes. Sob whether I'm ready to tell people. And now she wants to feel like she can swan off into the sunset with James and no guilt. So, hey presto, force you into a position where you've got pretty much no choice at all over whether you forgive her.
I hadn't looked at it like that. But in a way, Nina was right. I'm not upset about what Claire's done, I said, although I knew in my heart that this was only partly true. What's really been bothering me?
What?
But suddenly I couldn't say it. The feeling of nakedness was back, and I only shook my head and turned away, pulling on my socks. What I had been about to say before I lost my nerve was, how much did James know about it? Had he gone along with this plan?
We can go,
Nina said conversationally as she buttoned up her jeans and stood up to stretch, all 6'1" of her.
We could drive off into the sunset and leave Claire and Flo to the crazy together.
And Tom.
Oh, yeah. And Tom.
We could, couldn't we? It was an enticing picture, and I thought about it for a minute as Nina began brushing her hair. But we couldn't. I knew that, really.
Or rather, I couldn't.
If I'd said no before I even got here, that would have been one thing. But backing out now, halfway through the hen, there was only one interpretation. I could imagine them all speculating about it after I was gone. Poor Nora, poor cow, she's so screwed up over James. She ruined Claire's hen because she couldn't be happy for her. And worst of all, he would know. I could see it now, the two of them in their perfect flat in London, curled up in bed together, Claire sighing with concern over me. I'm worried, James. It's like she's never got over you. And he... I found my hands were clenched into fists, and Nina was gazing at me curiously. I had to consciously relax them, and I gave a little false-sounding laugh.
If only, right? But we can't.
It would be too much of a fuck you in the aftermath of Melanie leaving. Nina looked at me long and hard and then shook her head.
All right. I think you're kind of masochistic, but all right.
We've only got one more night, I was convincing myself now. I can take one more night.
All right. One more night it is.
Chapter 14. If only I had gone then.
I wish I could sleep, but I can't.
Even with the soft click and whir of the morphine driver. Instead, I lie awake, listening to the voices in the corridor. The policeman and woman discussing in low voices what has happened, and that one word reverberates inside my head. Murder. 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 Can it be true? Can it possibly be true? Who is dead? Claire? Flo? Nina? My heart stops at that. Not Nina. Not beautiful, brash, vibrant Nina, please. I must remember. I must try to remember what happened next. I know that come daybreak they will be in here asking me questions. They're waiting outside for me to wake up, waiting to talk to me. I must have my version of events straight by then. But what did happen next? The events of that day swirl and pound inside my head, mixing themselves up, tangling themselves together, the truth with the lies. I've only got a few hours left to try to sort it out. Step by step, then. What happened next? My hand goes to my shoulder, to the spreading bruise. Chapter 15. When Nina and I go downstairs, Flo had stopped crying and cleaned herself up and was eating toast and jam, evidently determined to pretend that nothing had happened.
Any coffee?
Nina asked innocently, but I knew from her tone she was only needling. Flo looked up miserably and her lip wobbled again.
I forgot, remember? But I promise I'll get some today when we go to the shooting range.
What?
We both stared at Flo, who gave a watery smile.
Yeah, I wanted it to be a surprise. We're going clay pigeon shooting.
I gave a short, shocked laugh. Nina didn't move.
Seriously?
Well, of course, why?
Because it's just like a hen night? Shooting?
I thought it would be fun. My cousin went on his stag.
Yes, but...
Nina trailed off, and I could see the thoughts running through her head as clearly as if they were written on her forehead in ticker tape. Why can't we go to a bloody spa and then clubbing like normal people? But then again, she can't possibly make us wear pink feather boas at a shooting range, right? So it could be worse.
I wondered, too, if she was thinking of Columbia, of the gunshot wounds she'd treated there not so long ago.
Okay,
she said at last.
They're just like clay plates, Flo was saying earnestly. So you don't need to worry if you're veggie or anti-blood sports.
I'm not veggie.
I know, but if you were...
I'm not veggie.
Nina rolled her eyes and made her way over to the bread bin, looking for more bread to toast.
I thought we'd have a spot of brunch here, with some games, maybe. I've done a quiz.
Nina winced theatrically.
And then we can head out after that and come back here for drinks and curry.
Curry?
We all turned to see Tom padding downstairs in his pyjamas and an open dressing gown, rubbing his eyes. His pyjama bottoms were knotted very low, barely above his hip bones, and there was an impressive amount of buff muscle on display.
Tom, hate to tell you, you forgot your shirt,
Nina said. I think you should put it on.
You don't want to tempt poor Nora beyond what she can bear.
I threw a toast crust at her. She dodged it, and it hit Flo.
Oops. Sorry, Flo. Stop it, you two,
Flo scolded. Tom only yawned, but he belted up his dressing gown and winked at me.
What's the plan for today, then?
he asked as he took a piece of toast from the plate Flo shoved at him.
Shooting,
Nina said, deadpan. Tom's eyebrows nearly disappeared beneath his hair.
I beg your pardon?
Shooting. Apparently that's Flo's idea of a jolly. Flo gave Nina a look, not quite sure if she was having the piss taken out of her or not.
Clay pigeon shooting, actually, she said defiantly. It's fun.
Okay.
Tom chewed his toast and looked round the table.
Am I the last one up? Oh, no. Melanie's still asleep, I presume.
Melanie?
Flo began indignantly. But at that moment, Claire came in from the living room and answered, raising her voice firmly above Flo's.
Melanie had to go, she said. Family stuff. Don't worry, Tom. Either me or Nina will give you a lift back to Newcastle.
But the good news is, it means we can all fit in the same car now, so we don't have to worry about navigating. I'll drive and Flo can direct, as she knows where it is.
Great, Nina said.
Super. We can all sing 10 green bottles and fight in the back seat.
I can hardly wait.
Okay, so I think it's time for the quiz, Flo said. She craned round in her seat to look at me, Nina and Tom in the back. I was crushed in the middle and feeling carsick already, not helped by Tom's headily overpowering aftershave. Or maybe it was Claire's perfume. It was hard to tell in the confined space. I wanted to open a window, but it was snowing outside and the heater was on full blast.
It's Claire versus you guys, Flo continued. Fingers on buzzers, please, for round one.
Wait, wait, Nina shouted. A quiz on what and what's the prize?
A quiz on James, of course, Claire said from the front seat, amused. Right, Flobs?
Of course, Flo said.
She was laughing. I felt more and more like vomiting.
Prize? I don't know. Glory? Oh, no, I've got it. The losing team can wear these for the rest of the day.
She dug around in her rucksack and brought out a handful of skimpy underwear emblazoned with the slogan, I heart James Cooper on the bum. I felt every muscle in my body go stiff with anger. Nina coughed and glanced at me sympathetically.
Flo, she said diffidently, but Flo ploughed on. Don't worry. Over trousers, I mean, or on your head or something. Right, first question. This is for team backseat, with a bonus point to Claire for any that you fail to get that she guesses correctly. What is James's middle name?
I shut my eyes against the car sickness and listened to Nina and Tom arguing over it.
Pretty sure it begins with a C, Tom was saying. So I'm thinking Chris?
Carl, with a K.
Is not, Nina insisted.
It's something to do with Russia. His dad was a professor of Russian politics.
Theodore.
Well, what's Stalin's first name?
Joseph, but I'm sure it's not Joseph. Besides, who'd name their kid after Stalin?
Okay, not Stalin, then. Name another famous Russian.
I gritted my teeth. Carl.
Dostoevsky? Lenin? Marx?
Marx!
Nina shouted.
It's Carl, I'm sure of it.
In spite of my growing nausea, I had to crack a smile at her competitiveness. Nina was incapable of losing at anything, an argument, a board game. She often said it was the reason she didn't do any competitive sport, because she couldn't bear losing to someone, even if that someone was Usain Bolt.
Is that your final answer?
Flo asked seriously. My eyes were still closed, but I felt Nina nodding vigorously beside me.
Carl, with a K. Correct! Question two. What is James's star sign?
He's old in the year, Nina said straight off. I remember that. He's definitely September or October. No, I think it's August, Tom said. I'm sure it's August.
They bickered amicably back and forth, swapping evidence, until Nina said,
Nora, what do you... Wait, are you okay? Your face is a bit green.
I'm feeling a bit sick, I said shortly.
Oh, God.
Nina recoiled almost physically, though there was a limit to how far she could get away from me in the narrow back seat.
Someone open a window. Tom, Tom, wind yours down too.
She nudged me in the ribs and said,
Open your eyes. Looking at the road helps. It's something to do with giving the brain the information that you're travelling.
Reluctantly, I opened my eyes. Flo was grinning in the front seat. Claire was driving along calmly, and I could see in the rearview mirror that she had an amused smile on her face. She caught my eye for a fleeting moment, and the smile twitched. For a moment, just a moment, I wanted to slap her across her perfect, beautiful cheekbone.
"I'm sure it's August," Tom said again. "I remember going to the proms with him and Bruce one year."
"Oh, for crying out loud," I snapped. "It's the 20th of September. I've no idea what sign that is."
"Virgo,"
Tom said instantly. He didn't seem to hold my shortness of temper against me.
"Are you sure about the date, Nora?"
I nodded.
"Okay, Virgo. That's our answer."
2 points to Team Backseat Drivers, Flo said delightedly. Claire, you will have some catching up to do. Next question. What is James's favourite food?
I wanted to shut my eyes, but I didn't dare. This was torture. I looked down at my lap away from Claire and pushed my nails into my palm, trying to distract myself from the nausea and the memories that were crowding in unbidden. I had a sharp, flashing picture of James, sprawled on his bed after school, eating his way through a bowl of clementines. He loved those things. For a moment the scent was sharp in my nostrils, the sweet tang of the oil, the smell of his room, of tumbled sheets and him. I used to love clementines, love the smell of them on his fingers, finding the peel in his pocket. I never touch them now.
"Penang curry?" Tom said uncertainly, and Flo pulled a face.
"Almost, but I can only give you half a point for that. Penang with..."
"Tofu,"
Tom said promptly. Flo nodded.
3 points! 2 more questions to go before Claire's round. Question 4. Which play was James's West End debut?
"West End in what sense?"
Tom asked.
"I mean, are you counting the National as West End? Because personally, I wouldn't."
There was some muttered discussion between Flo and Claire in the front seat, and Flo turned back round.
"Okay, let me rephrase that as London debut."
I googled James once, only once. Google was spattered with images of him, pictures of him in costume, on stage, publicity stills, shots of him smiling at charity functions and opening nights. The ones I couldn't bear were the ones where he was looking directly at the camera, directly out of the screen, at me. When I scrolled down to one where he was naked on stage in Equus, I had closed the browser with shaking hands, as if I'd stumbled on something violent or obscene. Tom and Nina were conferring over the top of my head.
"We think it was as an understudy in The History Boys," Nina said at last.
Flo sucked in her breath.
"Ooh, close. I'm sorry, that was his second role. Over to Claire."
"Vincent in Brixton,"
Claire said.
1 point to me."
"Never heard of it,"
Nina said. Tom leaned across me and punched her.
"It won the Laurence Olivier Award for Best New Play. And a Tony Award."
"Never heard of that either. Who's Tony?"
"Jesus!"
Tom threw up his hands.
"I'm in a car with a bleeding Philistine."
"Okay," Flo said loudly, talking over them. 5th and final question before we hand over to Claire for her round. When and where did James propose to Claire?
I shut my eyes again, listening to the chorus of protest from Tom and Nina.
"That's not fair."
"They should at least be things that Claire has a chance of not knowing."
"He proposed on her birthday,"
Tom said.
"I know that because they came to lunch with me and Bruce the next day, and Claire was flashing that ring. Where is it, Claire?"
"Oh, I..."
I heard Claire shift in the driving seat and fumble the gear change as we took a junction too fast.
"I left it at home. To tell you the truth, I've not got used to wearing it yet, and I keep panicking I'm going to lose it."
"As for where..."
I could hear the frown in Tom's voice.
"I'm going to go for a pure punt and say Jay Shiki."
"Oh, so close!"
Flo sucked in her breath.
"Birthday was right, but it was in the bar at the South Bank. Sorry, 0.5 there. So that's 3.5 points and 1.5 to Claire."
"Some of those were fixes," Tom grumbled.
that we'll get our revenge.
Right, round two. Question one to Claire. What was James's first pet called?
Blimey. Claire sounded stumped.
I think it was a hamster, but I honestly don't know.
Backseat team?
No idea, Nina said. Nora?
She had the grace to sound awkward, as if she knew how painful this all was.
I did know, but I was damned if I was telling them. I only shook my head.
A guinea pig called Mindy. Null points. Question two. Who is James's ideal celebrity woman?
Claire burst out laughing.
Okay, for self-respect, I'm going to say the person who looks most like me, which is... God, who do I look like? Christ, you always sound delusional, whatever you say. Okay, he likes strong women, funny women. I'm going to say... Billy Piper.
You don't look anything like Billy Piper, Nina objected. Well, except that you're both blonde.
Well, it's not Billy Piper, Flo said. It's...
She consulted her piece of paper.
Jeez, I have no idea who this is. Jean... How do you say that? Morrow? Claire?
Never heard of her either. Is she a stage actress, Tom?
Right here,
Flo interjected, and we rounded the corner with a sickening swing.
Jean Moreau, Tom said. She's a French actress. She was in that Truffaut film, Jules et Jim, I think it was. But I didn't know she was James's favourite actress.
Well, I'd hardly call her a celebrity,
Clegg grumbled as we lurched over a humpback bridge and picked up speed. The sick feeling rose again.
Next question. What is James's favourite designer clothes label?
Favourite designer clothes label? The James I'd known would have laughed at the very suggestion. I wondered if it was a trick question and Claire was about to say Oxfam. Claire tapped her fingers on the wheel, thinking.
I'm stuck between Alexander McQueen, she said at last, and Comme des Garçons. But I'm going to go for McQueen, mainly because he actually wears McQueen.
Jesus wept.
Correct,
Flo said.
Well, it actually says... If we're talking people I think are cool, then probably Vivienne Westwood, but if you mean designers I wear, then McQueen. So I think that counts. Question four. Which body part?
She began to laugh.
Did James accidentally slice off age 10 in a woodwork lesson?
He took a chunk off his knuckle, Claire said instantly. The scar's still there.
I squeezed my eyes tighter shut. I remembered that scar so well. A white circle on the knuckle of his little finger, and a long silver line tracing up the outside of his wrist, pale against his tan. I remembered kissing my way along that line, up his forearm, to the soft crook of his elbow, and James lying there, stiff and shaking, trying not to laugh as my lips brushed the ticklish soft skin of his inner arm.
Correct! Flo said. You're doing well. Leveled up. It's 3.5 all round. So this final one is the decider. If Claire gets this, she wins and you lot wear the pants. So, drum roll, please. At what age did James lose his virginity?
Nausea rose up in my throat and I opened my eyes.
Stop the car.
What?
Claire glanced at me in the rearview mirror.
Jesus, Lee, you're green.
Stop the car.
I put a hand over my mouth.
I'm going...
I couldn't say any more. I pressed my lips together, breathing through my nose as Claire bumped to a hasty halt, and then I scrambled out across Nina's lap and stood on the snowy verge, hands on knees, shivering with the strange aftermath of nausea.
Are you okay?
I heard Flo's anxious voice behind me.
Want me to do anything?
I couldn't speak. I just shook my head vehemently, wishing she'd go away. Wishing they'd all go away.
Are you all right, Lee?
Claire's voice floated out of the window.
Nora, I thought viciously, you stupid bitch.
But I said nothing, just waited for my shuddering breathing to go back to normal and the sickness to subside.
Are you okay, Nora?
It was Nina beside me, her hand on my shoulder. I nodded and then slowly straightened up, taking a long, shaky breath. The cold air stung the inside of my lungs, but it was a clear, cleansing cold, a relief after the hot stuffiness of the car.
Yeah, sorry. I just went a bit. I think it was sitting in the back seat.
I think it was Flo's fucking nauseating quiz, Nina said.
She didn't bother to lower her voice, and I winced on Flo's behalf and glanced behind me apologetically, but either she didn't hear or she didn't care. She was chatting away to Claire unconcernedly.
Flo,
Nina said, turning back to the car.
I think Nora should sit in the front. Is that okay?
Oh, yeah. Totally, totally fine.
Totally. Nora, you poor thing.
You should have said if you were feeling rubbish.
I'm okay, I said stiffly. But I took the front seat that Flo had vacated and slid in beside Claire. She flashed me a sympathetic look, and when Flo said enthusiastically from the back seat,
Right, back to the quiz,
Claire interjected.
I think we'll just call it a draw, yeah, Flots? Maybe we've all had enough quiz for the moment.
Oh. Flo's face fell, and I couldn't help but feel sorry for her. Whoever's fault this whole mess was, it wasn't hers. Her only crime was trying to be a good friend to Claire.
Chapter 16
Leonora!
There was a hand shaking me, pulling me awake.
Leonora, I'm going to need you to wake up, ducky. Leonora!
I feel fingers pulling at my eyelids and a light, blindingly bright, shining in.
Ow!
I blink and pull back and a hand lets go of my chin.
Sorry, Docs. Are you awake now?
The face is disconcertingly close, her eyes staring into mine. I blink again and then nod. Yes. Yes, I'm awake. I don't know when I dozed off. It felt like I was awake half the night, watching the silhouettes of the police through the glass, running through things in my head, trying to remember. The clay pigeon shoot. That was the recoil bruise. I must remember to tell the police. If only I can keep things straight in my head. But the closer things get to whatever happened, the hazier they get. What did happen? Why am I here? I must have spoken the last words aloud, for the nurse gives a kindly smile.
You had a bit of a car accident, my love.
Am I okay?
Yes, nothing broken.
She has a pleasant Northumberland burr.
But you've knocked your poor face something awful. You've got a couple of beautiful black eyes, but no fractures.
But that's why I had to wake you. We have to do observations every few hours just to make sure you've not had a funny turn in the night. I was asleep, I say stupidly, and then rub my face. It hurts as if I've head-butted a window.
Careful now,
the nurse says. We've got a few cuts and bruises. I rub my feet, feeling the grime and grit and blood. I feel disgusting. I need a pee. Can I have a shower? I ask.
My head feels bleary.
There is an ensuite in the corner of the room I can see. The nurse looks down at the chart at the foot of the bed.
Let me ask the doctor. I'm not telling you no, but I'd like to just make sure.
She turns to go, and I catch sight of the silhouette outside the door, and it comes back to me. The conversation I heard last night, it has a nightmarish quality. Was it really true? Did I really hear what I thought I heard, or did I dream it? Wait, I say. Wait, last night I heard the people outside, but she's gone already, the door flapping back behind her with a gust of food smells and sounds from the corridor. As she walks out, the policewoman outside catches at her arm, and I hear a burst of conversation and see the nurse shaking her head emphatically.
Not yet,
I hear.
Permission from the doctor. Have to wait.
I don't think you appreciate.
The policewoman's voice is low, but her tones are clipped and clear as a newsreader's, and her words filter through the glass much more distinctly than the nurse's northern burr.
That this is now a homicide investigation.
Oh, no. The nurse is shocked. Poor love didn't make it then.
No.
So it's true. I didn't imagine it. It wasn't some product of too much morphine in my battered head. It's true. I struggle up against the pillows, my heart pounding in my throat, and on the monitor to my left I see the little green line leaping with panicked jerks against the flat line. Someone is definitely dead. Someone is dead. But who?
Chapter 17.
Welcome to Tuckett's Wood,
the man said in a slightly bored Australian accent. He was tanned and chiselled and reminded me slightly of Tom Cruise, and from the way Flo was gazing at him, her green eyes wide and her mouth slightly open, I could tell that I wasn't the only one seeing the resemblance.
My name's Greg, and I'll be your instructor here today.
He stopped, seeming to count heads, and then said,
Hang about. I've got 6 here on my bookings. Someone's gone AWOL?
Yes, Flo said tightly. Someone certainly has. No prizes for guessing who I'll be imagining when I open fire.
So, we're 5 then today?
The instructor said easily, not seeming to notice Flo's tense annoyance.
Fair dues. Right. First off, I have to tell you about our safety precautions.
He began a long speech about ear defenders, alcohol, the responsibilities of gun ownership, and so on. Once we'd established that, yes, we were all complete beginners, no, none of us held a shotgun license, and, yes, we were all aged over 18 and sober, we signed a long waiver form and trooped through into the back half of the Outward Bound Centre, where the instructor sized us up.
All I can say is, thank God you're none of you wearing pink feather boas and all that malarkey. You wouldn't believe the trouble we have with hen parties. You.
He pointed at Flo.
Flo, was it? Your jacket's a bit thin. You probably want something a bit thicker against the recoil.
He dug around in a chest behind him and fished out a padded barber. Flo made a face, but put it on.
Sorry, I have to ask, she said as she zipped it up. Is your name really Greg? Is that a nickname?
No, Greg. Short for Gregory.
Oh, Greg!
Flo said, and laughed a little too loudly. Greg gave her a slightly odd look.
Yeah, Greg, that's what I said. Now, the thing to remember,
he continued, getting out a broken shotgun and laying it on a trestle table,
is that a gun is a weapon designed to kill. Never forget that. Treat it with respect, and it'll treat you with respect. Mess around with it, and like as not, you'll be the one that ends up messed up. Most important of all, never, never point a gun at anyone, loaded or unloaded. And if you get a misfire, don't go looking down the barrel to see what happened. All this sounds simple, but you'd be amazed how often people don't obey simple safety precautions. Right. Now we're going to run through a few basics about loading, closing and breaking the gun, and then we'll head out into the wood and try a few clays. Any questions, just shout. Now the first cartridges we'll be shooting with today...
We all listened in silence as he talked through the technicalities, the silliness of the car journey quite gone. I was glad to have something to concentrate on, glad to stop thinking about Claire and James, and I got the impression that the others felt the same, or at least most of them. Nina and Claire had both changed the subject when Flo had tried to start discussing the honeymoon plans. Tom had said nothing, and had spent most of the remaining car journey tapping away on his BlackBerry, but I saw his quick glance up at me and Claire, and I knew that he was filing all this away. If you write about this, I thought, I will fucking kill you. But I said nothing, just nodded as Greg said something about automatic traps. At last the talk was done, and we all followed Greg and trooped out of the hut into the sparse pine wood, our guns broken and hooked over our arms.
"Hey, if you enjoy this, maybe you should put a shotgun on the wedding list,"
Flo said to Claire and gave her loud, braying laugh.
"A shotgun wedding in the most literal sense, huh?"
Claire laughed. I think James would kill me if I started messing around with the gift list now. It took the best part of a day in John Lewis to get it whittled down to what we've got now. You wouldn't believe the arguments we had. Just choosing a coffee maker took about 2 hours. Is a Heston Blumenthal endorsement a plus or a minus? Do we need a milk frother? Should we get bean to cup or one of those pod machines?
Oh, bean to cup, surely,
Tom interrupted.
George Clooney can say what he likes, but pods are so noughties. They're the soda stream de nos jours. Catchy, but fundamentally pointless and inconvenient.
You sound exactly like James, Claire said.
But then bean to cup is all very well, but what do you do if the grinder goes? That was my argument. You're stuck with a useless machine, whereas if you get a separate grinder...
True, true,
Tom said, nodding.
So what did you decide?
Well, I'm a tea gal, as you know. James is the coffee fiend, so I gave him the casting vote, and he went for The Sage by Heston Blumenthal, bean to cup.
Bruce looked at one of those last year.
Hefty beast, and best part of 600 quid from what I remember.
About that, Claire agreed. Nina caught my eye and went cross-eyed. I tried to keep my face expressionless, but my heart was with her. £600 for a coffee machine.
I like coffee, but £600.
And on a gift list, too. I knew she meant nothing by it, but there was something unintentionally offensive about Claire's casual assumption that people could spend that much on her, or would want to. Or maybe it was James's assumption. The thought left a bad taste in my mouth.
Right,
Greg called as the trees thinned out into a large grassy clearing. There was a little breeze-block wall over the far side.
Everybody hold up here. Now, the kind of cartridge that we'll be using today, Greg said, with the air of someone reciting a well-worn spiel, is 7.5. This is a good mid-range type of shot, suitable for pretty much all types of clay shooting, whether that's sport, skeet or trap. This,
he held up a cartridge,
is a live 7.5 round with the shot itself packed into the tip.
He tapped the rounded end.
The wad in the centre and the gunpowder and primer at this metal end here. Now, before we get going, I'm going to show you the effects of a cartridge full of 7.5 on a human body.
Don't be asking for volunteers next,
Flo hooted. Greg turned a deadpan face onto her.
Very kind of you to step forward, young lady.
Flo gave a nervous laugh. She looked taken aback, but at the same time slightly thrilled.
It should be the hen, really,
she protested as Greg beckoned, but she went and stood beside him anyway, blushing and covering her face in pantomime fear.
Right. So, Flo here has kindly volunteered to help demonstrate the effects of a barrel full of shot at close quarters.
He paused for a beat and then winked.
But don't worry, she's not going to be on the business end. What I have here,
he held up a large sheet of paper with a black outline on it,
is a paper target, more usually used for handgun target practice.
He fished in his pocket, pulled out some tacks and pinned the target sheet to a nearby tree. The bark was blistered and pockmarked with wounds, and it wasn't hard to guess what was about to happen next.
Everybody stand back, please. Ear defenders on, Flo.
I feel like a DJ,
Flo said, grinning as she pulled the neon headphones over her ears.
Now, I'm loading the cartridge into the gun.
He slid it into place.
And shutting the barrel as we demonstrated back at the center. Flo, come up here. Stand in front of me. Right, bringing the gun up to your shoulder.
He held it against her, steadying it in place. Flo gave a slightly hysterical titter.
Ah, Greg's quite dishy, isn't he?
Tom whispered into my ear.
I wouldn't mind having him correct my stance. Flo certainly looks like she's not about to object.
Hold it firm, Greg said. Now, finger on the trigger.
He held Flo's hand, bracing the stock and barrel against her.
And gently squeeze the trigger, no sharp movements.
There was a deafening crack. Flo gave a little squeak and staggered back against Greg's chest, and the paper in front of us exploded into pieces.
Jesus,
Tom said. I'd seen target shooting on American films, nice, neat little holes close to the bullseye of the outlined figure, but this was something else. The shot had hit the paper full in the chest, and the whole middle section of the piece was virtually destroyed. As we watched, the legs fluttered free and drifted gently to the leafy ground.
Quite.
Greg took the gun off Flo and walked across to stand close to us. Flo's face, as she trotted beside him, was a mixture of alarm and excitement, her cheeks pink.
I wasn't sure if it was the thrill of the explosion or whether, as Tom had suggested, she had enjoyed Greg's one-to-one attention.
"As you can see," Greg continued, "this single shot at close quarters has done quite a bit of damage. If that was a person, it's doubtful they'd make it as far as the reception centre, let alone the local hospital. So the moral of this is, ladies and gentlemen, respect your weapon. Okay? Any questions?"
We all shook our heads mutely.
Only Flo was beaming.
Nina looked distinctly grim. I remembered the gunshot wounds she treated with MSF and wondered what she was thinking. Greg nodded once, as if satisfied, and we all trooped silently after him to face the trap.
Chapter 18.
"That was so much fun!"
Flo collapsed backwards onto the sofa and kicked off her boots.
Her socks were pink and fluffy.
She shook the snow out of her hair. It had started again on the drive back.
"That was ace! Tom, you were a crack shot!"
Tom grinned and slumped back into an armchair.
"I used to do a lot of archery as a teen. I guess the skills are similar."
"Archery?"
Nina eyed him disbelievingly.
"As in Robin Hood and his Merry Men? Did you have to wear tights?"
"As in the stuff they do at the Olympics," Tom said.
He was obviously well used to teasing, and it barely registered.
"No tights involved. I used to do competitive fencing, too. It's very good for you, very physical. I'm out of shape now."
He flexed one bicep and looked at it with what was supposed to be a rueful expression, but the undertone of slight self-satisfaction rather showed through. Nina made a sympathetic face.
"God, yeah. It must be awful having pecs the size of a teen girl's boobs and a six-pack to match. I don't know how Bruce puts up with it."
"Stop it, you two," Flo scolded.
Claire watched them from the far sofa, and I found myself watching her, remembering how she loved to observe, how she used to throw a remark out like a pebble into a pond, and then back quietly away to watch the ripples as people scrapped it out. It was not an endearing habit, but it was one I could not condemn. I understood it too well. I, too, am happier watching than being watched.
Claire turned her head and caught me watching her, watching Tom and Nina squabbling,
and she smiled a small conspiratorial smile that said, "I see you." I looked away. What had she hoped to accomplish by inviting me here?
Nina saw it as an attempt to solve her conscience at my expense, the equivalent of an adulterous husband confessing to his wife.
I did not. I don't think Claire lost any sleep over hooking up with James. And in any case, she didn't deserve my condemnation. She owed me nothing. James and I broke up long ago. No. I thought that perhaps she had merely wanted to watch, to see how I took it. Perhaps that was the same reason she outed Nina, like a child who sees a teeming anthill and simply can't not poke it. And then they step back and watch.
"How about you, Lee?"
Flo said suddenly, and I looked away from Claire, jerked out of my thoughts. "Sorry, what?"
"Did you enjoy that?"
"Ish." I rubbed my shoulder where I could feel a bruise already forming. "My shoulder hurts, though."
"You got a right jolt from the recoil on that first shot, didn't you?"
The kick of the gun had surprised me, whacking back against my shoulder bone with a whoomp that knocked the breath out of me.
"You have to hold it firm in the first place," Tom said. "You were like this. Look."
He reached up and took down the shotgun over the mantelpiece and braced it against his shoulder, showing me the loose stance that had cost me a bruise. The muzzle of the gun was pointing directly at me. I froze.
"Hey,"
Nina said sharply.
"Tom?"
Claire struggled up straighter against the sofa cushions, looking from me to Tom and then back again.
"Put that down."
Tom just grinned. I knew he was joking, but in spite of myself, I felt every muscle in my body tense.
"God, I feel like Jason Bourne," he said. "I can literally feel the power going to my head as I speak. Let's interrogate a few people. How about this for starters? Nora, why in all the years I've known Claire has she never mentioned your name?
I tried to speak, but my throat was suddenly so dry I could barely swallow.
Tom, Claire said more sharply. Call me paranoid, but should you be waving that thing around after all Grig's wise words about guns fucking you up?
It's not loaded, Flo said and yawned. My aunt uses it for scaring rabbits.
Still, Claire said.
Just kidding around, Tom said.
He gave another wolfish grin, showing those unnaturally white teeth, and then lowered the muzzle and hooked the shotgun back on its pegs. I slumped back against the sofa, feeling the wave of adrenaline recede, and my fingers uncurl from their rigid fists. My hands were shaking.
Ha fucking ha, Claire said.
She was frowning like someone totally failing to see any funny side at all.
Next time you want to wave that thing around, can you make sure it's not one of my friends on the sharp end?
I shot her a grateful look, and she rolled her eyes at me as if to say, Dick.
Sorry, Tom said mildly. Like I said, just kidding. But I apologize if any offense was caused.
He gave a mock bow in my direction.
Right. Excuse I, Flo said with another yawn. I'd better make a start on supper.
Want a hand? Claire said, and Flo's face lit up. Her smile was extraordinary. It transformed her whole face.
Really? I feel like you should be acting like the queen of the day.
Nah, come on. I'll chop or something.
She heaved herself up off the sofa, and they left the room. Claire's arm slung companionably round Flo's shoulders.
Tom looked after them as they left. Funny couple, aren't they?
He said.
What do you mean?
I said.
I can't quite fit the Claire I know together with Flo. They're so different.
The remark shouldn't have made sense, given that they were so physically similar, and both dressed in an almost identical uniform of grey stonewashed jeans and stripy top. But I knew what he meant. Nina stretched.
They've got one really important interest in common, though.
What's that?
They both think Claire's the centre of the fucking universe.
Tom snorted, and I tried not to laugh. Nina only looked sideways out of her glinting dark eyes, a little wry smile twitching at the corner of her mouth. Then she stretched and shrugged, all in one fluid movement.
Right. I might phone the old trouble and strife.
She pulled out her mobile and then made a face.
No reception.
How's yours, Lee?
Nora.
But there were only so many times I could correct people without seeming obsessively controlling.
I don't know,
I said and felt in my pockets.
That's odd. It's not here. I'm sure I had it at the shooting range. I remember checking Twitter.
Maybe I left it in the car. I don't think I'd have any reception either, though. I haven't had a bar since I got here. You got a bit of reception from our room earlier, didn't you?
Yeah. Nina had picked up the phone receiver and was jiggling the cradle. This one's still out. Okay. I'm going upstairs to hang off the balcony and try to get a bar or two. Maybe I can send a text. What's so urgent? Tom asked.
Nina shook her head.
Nothing. Just, you know, I miss her.
Fair play.
We both watched as she disappeared upstairs, long legs eating up the stairs two at a time. Tom sighed and stretched out on the couch.
Are you not phoning Bruce? I asked.
He shook his head.
To tell the truth, we had a bit of a disagreement, let's call it, before I left.
Oh, right.
I kept my voice neutral. I never know what to say in these situations. I hate people prying into my business, so I assume others will feel the same way. But sometimes they want to spill, it seems, and then you look cold and odd backing away from their confidences. I try to be completely non-judgmental, not pushing for secrets, not repelling confessions. And in truth, although part of me really doesn't want to hear their petty jealousies and weird obsessions, there's another part of me that wants to egg them on. It's that part of me that stands there nodding, taking notes, filing it all away. It's like opening up the back of the machine to see the crude workings grinding away inside. There's a disappointment in the banality of what makes people tick, but at the same time there's a kind of fascination at seeing the inner coils and cogs.
The trouble is that the next day they almost invariably resent you for having seen them naked and unguarded. So I'm deliberately reserved and non-committal, trying not to lead them on. But somehow it doesn't seem to work. All too often I end up pinned to the wall at parties, listening to a long tale of how so-and-so fucked them over.